On the morning of April 27, I saw mothers strolling with babies along the streets, children running around, an ordinary weekend life. At 11 a.m., we were told the whole town would be evacuated by 2 p.m. The vehicles were ready, the routes were set. The evacuation was carried out carefully, quickly, and accurately, although the circumstances were unusual. Some mishaps and mistakes were made, regretfully. For example, some citizens asked the state committee for a permit to evacuate on their own vehicles. The town had several thousand private vehicles, and this was permitted after some considerations. This was likely a mistake. Some of the cars that people used to evacuate were contaminated, and the checkpoints with dosimetry measurements to check cars for contamination were only set up some time later. This way, people took their personal belongings from the town and contaminated places outside of Pripyat, even though they took a bare minimum, expecting the evacuation to only last a few days. I should reiterate that the evacuation happened before the contamination level in the town was high, so the belongings and the people themselves were not strongly contaminated. In fact, none of the Pripyat citizens who were away from the station when the emergency happened, which is almost 50,000 people, none of them got any significant radiation damage. This was the second line of action, protecting the people. Next, the State Hydrometeorology Committee and the group that consisted of General Pikhanov, the power station service, and the groups of physicists who we called to the station organized more accurate dosimetry measurements and measurements of isotopic composition. I should say that both dosimetry groups and military groups did a good job, but we got the most accurate information from a radio institute laboratory that worked in the area of exposure. This group was led by Comrade Petrov, who was the first to come here. For example, the Dosimetry Service of Energy Technology Research and Development Institute, which was led by Comrade Yegorov, gave us the most accurate data, both on isotopic composition and on the radioactivity distribution. We used their data to make decisions. It was known that in the first days, several factors changed the damage zone. The air masses moving, the dust formation next to the reactor number 4, after airdrops and chemicals were injected into the reactor. Several words on how the state committee worked, and several personal recollections from that time. First, I want to say that we were lucky to have Boris Evdokimovich Shcherbina as the committee chairman. He believed it was necessary to listen to the specialists. He was quick to understand their point of view and make a decision immediately. He was never slow or timid to make a decision. It was clearly seen in the emergency situation. I'll give just one example of long considerations about lead injections. When Alexandrov talked to me, it took him very long to understand why we needed lead. I explained that we couldn't have used iron shot, as I previously mentioned. We also couldn't possibly wait for the iron shot to arrive from the station. That would mean stabilizing the temperature at a very high level, while we wanted to stabilize it on a much lower level. After our first estimates, a batch of 200 tons was ordered, but I told Boris Shcherbina that 200 tons won't help a bit. In fact, we could have placed 2,000 tons inside a demolished reactor without hesitation. I thought 2,000 tons was a lot. It would be hard for the state to deliver this much in a day or two. He listened to me and, as I learned later, ordered as much as 6,000 tons of lead on the spot. He believed we might have made some mistakes in calculations and he preferred having excess materials to failing to complete his task. This was a particular example. We were amazed by the station staff. They gave a conflicting impression. I've mentioned this briefly before. We found people who were ready for any actions in any conditions. In some later movies and recollections, I've read that there had been people, including the station staff, who quit their posts. The circumstances were hard. After the evacuation, a lot of people did not know where their children or mothers were, because citizens were evacuated to different places. Some people were brought to villages and settlements and chose to stay there, and some people immediately got tickets to travel onwards to their relatives elsewhere. This made the situation mentally hard. However, all the station staff, both ordinary and high-ranking ones, the Ministry of Energy staff, were ready to take active, fierce, desperate actions. The station owners and the Ministry of Energy executives had no idea, though, what action were needed, what had to be done in this emergency situation, how the operations had to be planned and organized. The State Committee had to take lead, assess the situation, organize the required measures on the spot. This confusion was obvious even in minor things. I recall that in the first days, when the State Committee was still in Pripyat, we did not have enough emergency respirators, personal dosage meters, or even tube meters, as unreliable as they were. We didn't have enough equipment for all the people who worked in the emergency. Moreover, some equipment wasn't properly reloaded, and people were not instructed how to use it correctly. When to reload dosage meters, this was unexpected. We were kicking ourselves because the station lacked external dosimetry equipment that would produce automated telemetry radioactivity measurements within 1 to 10 kilometers around the station. Because of that, we had to send a lot of people to reconnaissance missions. We didn't have, say, remote control drones with dosimetry equipment, so we had to use a lot of aircraft pilots for reconnaissance. Of course, manpower was indispensable for engineering operations, such as airdrops or other operations with large equipment on board a helicopter. In these cases, people were indispensable, but simple and frequent operations could have been made by unmanned small remote controlled drones. We lacked those, lacked basic technical standards. In the first days, from April 27th to the 29th, people used to bring meat, vegetables, cola, and water to contaminated rooms, share them and eat them with bare hands. We lacked even hygienic standards of safe eating. It was later that we introduced canteens, tents, and proper eating standards. They were primitive, but we could control how contaminated the food was and how contaminated the hands were. Back in the first days, none of these were organized, which was astounding. I recall these everyday events. The State Committee worked in the town of Pripyat for the first few days. We took up quarters at the local party committee. The nights, if we had the chance to sleep, we spent at the hotel next to the party committee. After the evacuation was over, the State Committee spent a couple of more days at Pripyat before moving to a local party committee in Chernobyl to work at one of the military bases. Some conveniences were organized later. We were offered an accommodation at Ivankovo, 50 kilometers from Chernobyl. If we were to make such a commute daily, we couldn't organize a control center for emergency measures. Nothing was prepared, and we had to improvise for better or for worse.